Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We all know people who just seem to be lucky. Things almost always seem to work out for them. They get that promotion at work. They're healthy, and they're always surrounded by people who like them. My next guest, psychologist and neuroscientist Elaine Fox, argues that these people are not simply lucky. Their brains are actually wired in a way that sets them up for success in many cases. In her new book, Rainy Brain, Sunny Brain, How to Retrain Your Brain to Overcome Pessimism and Achieve a More Positive Outlook, she explains the neuroscience of optimism and shows how we can retrain our brains to have more positive lives. Welcome to WNYC, Elaine Fox.
Hi, Brian. Thank you very much.
First, the terms, rainy brain and sunny brain, do they mean just what we might think they mean?
Yes, to some extent. In rainy brain, sunny brain, what I'm really talking about is that we have a set of brain circuits that tip us either towards a more negative way of looking at things, a kind of a pessimistic mindset, or the sunny brain obviously tips us towards a more optimistic mindset. But what I really argue in the book is that at the very root of these two different sets of circuits are the fear system on the one hand and the pleasure system on the other hand. Now, these are two very ancient regions in our brain which help us to, on the one hand, detect danger and threat, and on the other hand, the pleasure system pulls us towards the things that are good for us. So things that, you know, like food and shelter and warmth and sex, things that are important for the survival of the species and for our own survival. So the idea is that there are circuits that go from these ancient systems to the higher areas of our thinking brain that ultimately tip us towards either a more optimistic or a more pessimistic way of looking at things.
And these are the amygdala, that portion of the brain that's the survival brain, the fear brain, right?
That's right, exactly, yes.
And what scientists call the nucleus accumbens, that's the optimism brain?
That's right. It's a little bit more complicated than that. So these are the kind of very ancient regions which we actually share with most creatures on the planet. You know, most creatures have these ancient regions. But of course, we have a much more recent, in evolutionary terms, part of our brain. So the way, in terms of the way these circuits develop, the analogy I use in the book is, if you imagine how a river forms through sand, you imagine on a beach, if your water flows down a particular track, ultimately, that pathway will get deeper and deeper and more entrenched. It's a little bit like that in the brain. There are circuits of chemicals that go from these very ancient regions to the more recent regions of the brain. And it's a little bit like an accelerator and a brake. So the fear system, if you like, is the accelerator, whereas the higher thinking
yes.
part of our brain is kind of like a brake.
So we've all got both, but you're saying that there are individual differences, depending on each person, as to whether the circuits are stronger on the fear side or the pleasure side, and so we tend to be optimists or pessimists?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, what we find in our research is that people differ quite profoundly in how reactive these rainy brain and sunny brain circuits are. And I really kind of argue quite strongly, hopefully, that we need both of these. We obviously need a rainy brain. The fear system is there for a very good reason, for example. We need to be aware of threat and aware of danger. But we also need to have a kind of an optimistic outlook as well. So it's really a combination of both of those things are very, very important. And overall, the evidence shows that having a slightly more optimistic outlook does actually have quite a lot of benefits that come with it.
So in terms of how people can affect their own outlooks, the traditional books on this would be like The Power of Positive Thinking. But if you're saying we're hardwired to land more on the optimistic side or the pessimistic side of things, how do we change that?
Well, that's right. Well, first of all, I'm not really saying that. I think what I'm saying is that it often seems like we're hardwired. But if you go back to that analogy, like the water going through the river, if you think of it in terms of it's like water going through sand, the more and more we think in a negative way, for instance, the more entrenched that way of thinking will become. But of course, it is in sand. It's not set in stone. So the idea is that actually we can change if we really try. And it's kind of interesting, you know, when I was writing the the book, I was aware that we all think of optimism in terms of positive thinking, but actually there are a lot of other components to optimism, and actually the other components are more important in many ways in terms of the benefits. So just to give you one example, optimists tend to have a very strong sense that they have some kind of control over their lives. Or somebody who's very pessimistic, you know, maybe prone towards depression, often they'll kind of say things like, you know, things happen out there in the world and I really can't do much about it, so I'm kind of buffered around between all these different things happening. Whereas optimists tend to have a sense that they have some degree of control over their lives. And that element of optimism, which has nothing to do with positive thinking, is actually one of the things that we know is has a lot of benefits. Another benefit is another component of optimism is a persistence. Optimists are people who tend not to give up. You know, if they have setbacks, they'll tend to get up and go again. And Thomas Edison, for example, told a very nice story when he was trying to invent an electric lamp. He was going through his notebooks and he realized that he'd tried out thousands of ways that hadn't worked. So he famously said, "We haven't failed. We've just found 10,000 ways that don't work."
I love that quote.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is a real insight into the mind of a real optimist. And in Rainy Brain, Sunny Brain, I try to get that message across that it's not just about positive thinking. That obviously is one element of optimism, but it's these other elements of optimism are the things that actually make the difference in terms of all of the benefits that we know optimism can bring.
But the things that you recommend look to me to be relatively traditional: mindful meditation, facing fears head on, seeking out positive experiences that induce favorable emotions like laughter, make a list of the positive things that happen to you each day, engage in activities that are truly meaningful to you. All of those things, that's what, you know, anybody's therapist might tell them, with or without the knowledge of the neuroscience, right?
That's right, and I think it is. I mean, one of the things I'm trying to do is to really kind of look at the techniques that do have good, solid scientific evidence behind them. Now, obviously, in terms of the techniques to change our brain, it kind of depends where people are along the spectrum. And one of the things we've been looking at, for example, which is quite a new technique, is called cognitive bias modification. And the idea here is we know that, for example, anxious people or depressed people tend to zone in fairly automatically on negative information. Now, the problem is these things happen well below people's conscious awareness, so they're very subliminal. But by using computerized techniques, and it's almost like a computerized game we're using, we're giving people hundreds and hundreds of examples where we're flashing up images, say some negative, some positive. And the idea is we're actually actively trying to retrain people's brains to automatically zone in on the more positive rather than the negative. Now, unfortunately, these things aren't kind of widely available as yet, but the hope is that we should be able to implement some of these kind of techniques on, say, smartphones and iPads and other, computers, for example. So I think there's a lot of new techniques that are being used now, mm-hmm, that are really trying to get, if you like, below the conscious level, because one of the real difficulties is that, if people are aware of their biases, that's fine, they can do something about it. But a lot of the time, we're not actually aware of the way our brain is tuning in to different things. So really getting in at that subliminal level is really quite important.
Interesting. Psychologist and neuroscientist Elaine Fox, author of Rainy Brain, Sunny Brain, How to Retrain Your Brain to Overcome Pessimism and Achieve a More Positive Outlook. 212-433-WNYC. David in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have some post-traumatic stress issues, and I've tried positive thinking techniques, including meditation. How hard do I have to work at your techniques, because I'd love to buy the book, to actually make the change if I have that kind of injury already?
Dr. Fox, go ahead.
Hi. PTSD is a very, very difficult thing to overcome. I think the evidence does suggest that things like mindfulness and other things are really effective. But unfortunately, as we were saying, you do need to kind of work pretty hard at it. It's a little bit like if you want to get really fit in the gym, you need to go and work really hard at it. Now, obviously, with something like a post-traumatic stress disorder, it really does take a lot of time. But I think the evidence evidence is that if you're persistent and keep going with these things, and it's effectively about finding things that work for you, you know, some things that particularly work for you and then some other more general things, you know, together, hopefully, if you stick with that, definitely there should be, you know, you should be able to improve things.
David, thank you and good luck. I hope that was at least a little helpful. And Raul in Prospect Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Raul.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if you have any advice for parents. I have generally a half-class full attitude. My wife has a half-class empty. So it's a little competition going on here.
So how do you train your kids to have the sunny brain is the question.
Exactly. Well, I think, again, it's actually very interesting. I, a lot of people, you have this. And again, you know, I just emphasize, we obviously do need a little bit of both. I mean, having a little bit of sunny brain, a little bit of rainy brain isn't a bad thing. I think one of the things that is important, I think thinking positively is an important element of it. But I really kind of think that positive actions is even a more important element of it. So just kind of getting out there and doing things. I think it's very easy for all of us to get into a kind of a habit of not bothering to do things that we know are going to make us feel good. And sometimes this is the case with children, you know, and so I think sometimes focusing on the actions, you know, if you really do get out and go to the park, you know, you might actually have a bit of fun. So, you know, I think just kind of focusing on those kind of actions and getting involved in hobbies that the kids will enjoy, it's those kind of things that that ultimately help people tune into a more sunnier way of looking at things.
Angela in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Angela.
You. I'm listening, and I was just wondering, when does it get to the point where you need medication? And I say this because, you know, I'm listening and saying, okay, great, I want to get this book. I'm currently in therapy, and I've been in therapy off and on since college to overcome depression and pessimism. You know, my father's two sisters and their daughters, you know, take antidepressant drugs, and this is something that I am totally against. And then as someone, you know, in her mid-40s, approaching menopause, and you have your hormones that are throwing you off, like, when is it more than just mind over matter and following a guideline and maybe I need to take medication? How do you know?
I'm so glad you called, Angela, because I was thinking the same thing. You know, Dr. Fox, the more people come to the conclusion that our moods are based on neuroscience, our brains, rather than just experiences, I think the more they tend to come to the conclusion that medications are appropriate for more people. Is that your conclusion?
Well, not necessarily. I think one of the things I would say to that is that I think, you know, the way of thinking and our experiences absolutely have an effect on our brain. I think we often have this idea that, you know, the experiences we have and what's happening in our brain are quite separate, but actually they're absolutely linked very, very closely. So, for example, just going back to, say, medication, and particularly antidepressant medication, there's a colleague of mine at the University of Oxford, Catherine Harmer, who's doing some very interesting work on this. And we know, for example, antidepressants change the chemical situation in the brain almost instantly. Within about an hour, you can see an effect. But the clinical effect, so people don't actually feel better for about 4 or 5 weeks or more. There's actually a long gap. Now, that's always been a little bit of a mystery. Now, what she's finding in her research is that what seems to be happening is when people take an antidepressant and we get these chemical changes, that starts to shift the cognitive biases I was talking about earlier. So the, you know, this automatic tuning in of the brain to the negative. And what seems to happen is once those kind of negative biases become a little bit more positive, that then helps people to interpret things in a little bit more positive way and have more positive social interactions. So ultimately, it's the cognitive effects that are actually having the clinical benefits, not the chemical effects. So I really do think that the two are so closely tied together. And the core of it is, the trick really is to try and change these cognitive biases. And whether that happens through something like meditation or cognitive behavioral therapy or drugs, it doesn't really matter. The key thing is to change the actual biases.
Fascinating. We're out of time, but another thing in your book is that you say that humans have an optimism bias, which is funny because, as you may know, studies have indicated that the optimism bias tends to make us too optimistic about spending and investment decisions, and pessimists
That's
actually
right.
tend to be closer to a realistic assessment of situations, right?
To some extent, that is the case, which is exactly why I think we need a mixture of both. And
yes.
Again, one of the things I kind of try to emphasize in the book is that the healthiest mindset is kind of a realistic optimism. So an optimism, but tied in with a realism.
Elaine Fox is the author of Rainy Brain, Sunny Brain, How to Retrain Your Brain to Overcome Pessimism and Achieve a More Positive Outlook. Our listeners really appreciated this. I can tell from our phones. Thank you very, very much.
Great. Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.